Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for October the 29th, 2021, the Halloween edition. This is episode number 82. Our top stories today: Hertz buys 100,000 Tesla Model 3s. Edison Future reveals pickup and van design. Range Rover debuts FEV models and teases an all-electric. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the undead Tom Logney, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the malevolent Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which, of course, is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the mysterious halls of Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together chilling, shocking videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. All right. So before we get ghosting, I'd like to ask you that you please subscribe to the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching on Twitch, you can also toll that bell icon for notifications there. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome, everybody. Okay, I'll stop now.
No, don't stop. I'm enjoying it.
Okay, so I guess let's kick it off by talking about what we've been driving this week. Kyle, I understand that you've been driving something like the opposite of all those fancy pants cars that you've been usually get. That's something awesome. Attainable, something in Halloween orange, maybe.
Are you talking about the new Mercedes S-Class? Because that's been amazing. But that's in the driveway now. But yes, the Nissan Leaf. So exciting. Big news. It's the same Leaf as the last few years. Yeah. And there's not much new about it other than it's a little bit cheaper by like $4,000, which is a big deal. But you used to get like $4,000 or $5,000 off at a dealer anyway. So does it actually make that much of a difference? The answer is, well, not really. Yeah, 62 kilowatt hour SL Plus. That's the maxed out one. They sent it out to Colorado for us and a couple other outlets here to make some videos with. And yeah, we just drove it around, shredded it up a canyon as usual, and really enjoyed it, actually, more so than I had in the past, because this time I didn't really have the time to do all the charging testing, the range testing. We've already done that with Leaf. So I just drove it around normally like a car. And it was great at that. I would get in. There's plenty of room. Best thing about this car, you can leave the heated seats on and the heated steering wheel because it's kind of like old school buttons and it stays on. So it was a little chilly every morning. I only really took it to Starbucks and back. I never had to re-put the seat heater on. Didn't have to do any fast charging. I only charged it like once or twice. Like when it got here, I full charged it because they drove it up from Denver, drove it around town, and then charged it one time and then gave it back to them full. So I mean, I drove it like 300 miles. It was great. I really enjoyed it, just around town and running errands, and for the price, especially on a lease, you can't go wrong.
The interior looks like it's improved over the years.
Same as last year, no difference at all. I don't think there are any I mean, this one has blue stitching. I can't remember if the last one did.
Right.
But
it's been a while since I've been in one car. So.
Yeah. It's a 160 kilowatt motor, 62 kilowatt hour battery pack, mid 200 mile range car that's still not liquid cooled on the battery pack. But again, for a city EV, if you're just leasing this thing, it actually doesn't matter because I didn't even get the battery past half during my time with it. Conversely, in North Carolina, I had it right in the middle of summer. I was trying to do charging testing. I had to drive it a lot and CHAdeMO charge it, and it just couldn't handle that use case. But just here cruising around my city, there are Leafs everywhere, just using it in this case, no problem at all. I mean, look, I think you couldn't buy this and have it as your only car, I don't think, because for road trips, it's just not possible. You can do like one CHAdeMO charge in a day, and then it has to cool down. For me, it wouldn't work at least. However, you know, I think if you lease it, lease the small battery pack and just do, you know, city errands. And I don't know what they're leasing out for now, but at least before this new car shortage, they were about $70 a month here in Colorado on a lease for a base one, which is like a cell phone bill. So just get one.
Is that $3,000 down?
No, I don't remember. I think that was zero down, $69 a month out of Denver Nissan was doing a deal because they had like 50 of them.
That's like a no-brainer. It's like, why would you not do that?
Well, I was talking to Tommy at TFL back then. We were like, oh, let's go in and get them together. And then I don't know why we never did. We probably should have. But the thing is, I thought to myself, like, well, if I'm going around the city, I already have the smart car. And that's a way more exciting way for me to get around the city. So that was what I was going to do.
Right. Hey, do they still get the federal tax rebate?
Yes, they have not hit $200,000 yet. Can you believe that?
I know. It's been on sale since, what, 2011?
11, yes.
And they still haven't hit $200,000?
Still haven't hit it.
Huh.
They're close.
I mean, they sold lots of more than that worldwide, of course. But
So they're very popular as a global vehicle. And they're popular here in the U.S., but it just seems amazing that somehow it's still available. But, you know, Chevrolet hit it with, well, Volt and Bolt. But I would have thought the Leaf would have been right up there. You know, right on the heels. But, you know, the other thing is Nissan has no plug-in hybrids. I don't think they do, at least. Yeah, they don't. So it's just the Leaf, and they haven't really – I mean, here's the thing with the Leaf. 11 years ago, this was the first mass market EV globally, and it was such a transformative vehicle. Nissan was ahead of everyone. Yeah. If they had just stayed in the EV world – and updating their cars and, you know, what Aria is going to be next year, do that 6 years ago, it really would have been, you know, they would have been leading the way, actually. And they had the opportunity to do so. But you could say across the entire model lineup, Nissan really dropped the ball. You know, all of their combustion vehicles were about as terrible as you could get. Their Leaf, they never did anything to. And then about 2 years ago, we started to see the fruits of this refresh come through. So we've seen, you know, their whole model lineup that we've reviewed on Out of Spec, you know, the new Frontier, their pickup truck, finally after 16 years, their Armada, their Rogue, et cetera. And they're getting very efficient. I think their Sentra SR we tested, which is like their base sedan, did like 45 mpg in our 70 mile per hour mpg test. Like, they're getting efficient, good looking, and better quality. And I just think we are a couple years away from seeing this transition hit on their electric side. We already know Aria is coming. We already know a second gen Leaf is coming. Right. It'll be multi-model now. We'll see how it goes.
We were talking about the Leaf crossover coming in last week, and but we're not sure if it's going to keep the Leaf name or not. I don't know. It was kind of unclear in the reports that I've read.
Well, we'll just wait and see.
I mean, it's a minor deal, but
yeah.
I think it is interesting that is it going to be the new Leaf? In which case, do they keep that nameplate going because they've got heritage there, or do they go with something entirely new? And we see that working both ways. Some companies like VW want to start fresh. They could have easily just called it the new e-Golf, but they called it the ID3 because they wanted a new series of ID numbers. And we see, you know, Mercedes-Benz do it and BMW, and then others just want to electrify the cars they've got. It's the Hummer. It's the electric Hummer, you know, it's the Ford F-150. So I would like to see the name Leaf stick around. I think it has heritage. If it's a similar vehicle, if it's an entirely different vehicle, doesn't make any sense, of course.
And my thoughts on that is probably the other way, Martin. I think that there's a lot of baggage that does come with the Leaf name. Just do some internet searches, Leaf battery, Leaf charging, and it just says problems, problems, problems. So I think somebody that's new to electrification that really doesn't know much about the Leaf, and this new Leaf comes out. So they, you know, they want to do some research on it, and they start Googling and searching and just come up with a myriad of articles about Leaf batteries and, you know, luckily no Leaf fires, but, you know, Leaf charging problems. And I almost think that the Heritage is great, but if this is an entirely new vehicle, they might be better off giving it a new name and starting fresh. That's my take on it.
Yeah, the new Leaf coming won't be CHAdeMO, but this one is, right, Kyle?
Yeah, which is dumb, which is why I say get the small battery base car, go for the cheap lease, and this is purely your second car. You know, a lot of homes here in the U.S., maybe it's different in other markets, but they're at least two car homes generally if you're, you know, so basically I think you have one car that can do all the road trips and then another car that fits the needs of one of the two people in the house's commutes. Right. And then the Leaf is perfect for that. You just drive it around town. We took it to dinner. We had, you know, we just, you know, drove it around and it was perfect at that. Really was just a great around town vehicle. Did we need the 62 kilowatt hour? No, I would have been fine with the small battery pack. And you know what? Make an even smaller one and give it to me for $40 a month. I'll take that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I like the 250 mile because that means I can go to the beach and back. I mean, that's usually that's my farthest big trip, you know?
Yeah. So generally, there's reason to get the big battery is if you have to do these, you know, sort of medium-sized trips that won't require a DC fast charge.
Right.
And you guys still have CHAdeMO on the public charging networks quite a lot.
Yeah, but it's so hard to rely on, though, because it's really just one.
Oh,
so
okay,
like an Electrify America station would have, you know, 8 CCS ports or 7 CCS ports and then one CHAdeMO. And usually, I mean, look, in my experience, I don't know, but the CHAdeMO ports seem to be down more often than not.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's a higher rate of issues on the CHAdeMO ports. Yeah. And also, we have to mention that, and we actually broke the story in Inside EVs, Electrify America, starting in January, is no longer going to install CHAdeMO on their new stations outside of California. California is requiring them to continue to install that one lone port. But the rest of the country, there'll be no more CHAdeMO connectors starting January 2022 on their new sites. They're going to support the ones in their existing sites for how long, they didn't say. But from now on, new locations will not have CHAdeMO.
New locations like Wyoming and South Dakota.
Filling in the gaps.
I believe they had a little announcement.
This is such a big deal.
That's the right states, because, right? Not Wyoming, South Dakota?
Yeah, well, they're putting one in Wyoming, which is like...
For now. Okay, I think there's more coming. Yeah. But
I mean, all right, let's be honest here, though. So I-80 goes across the entire U.S., but they just forgot about the Wyoming stretch because they went all the way to Ogallala, New Mexico, and then they go down to Denver, but they just forgot that Salt Lake City exists and people might want to go that way. So to go to Salt Lake City, Utah from my house in a CCS or CHAdeMO car, really, I can't go up to Cheyenne or over to Laramie if I take the back road and then over to Salt Lake City. I have to go down to Denver over the mountain pass, which, by the way, was close. So now you have to go south of Denver, like 9 hours to get to Salt Lake, maybe even 10 hours, and it should be like 4 or 5. So yeah, now that the CCS chargers are hopefully going to go across Wyoming, I can actually, like, this is the reason we've kept the Tesla mainly is if we need to go up into Wyoming, again, we lived, you know, a half hour from the Wyoming border. There's no DC fast chargers up there, for CCS cars, unless you go to Jackson Hole.
So to get to Utah, I see Salt Lake City is way over there. I see.
I would go up to I-80 and straight over to Salt Lake.
Right,
I would have to go down to 70 over the mountain pass and up right now.
Right. Which, it's a bit out of the way.
No, it's a huge bit out of the way because not only is it extra time out of the way, it's less efficient because you're driving through the mountains and more charging and so much traffic. You don't understand how busy I-70 is going into the mountains, especially on a Friday during ski season. It could take you, you know, 8 hours just to get from my house to Vail if you hit it at the wrong time. So Yeah, I mean, it's just a disaster. So the Tesla, I just go up, hit the supercharger network and go. And that's the benefit. Or we take the Sprinter and drive diesel. I mean, look, we're still out in the Wild West here. So this is big news.
So the one in Wyoming is going to be in Gillette, Wyoming.
Right. Well, we need more than one.
I was going to say, you need more than one to get to Salt Lake, don't you, though?
Yes. Yeah. So this isn't transformative yet. But
it's coming.
Yeah. It's a start.
It's a start, yeah.
And haven't said where the rest of the stations are going to be. I guess we can imagine they'll be across I-80, right?
Yeah, there's not too many other places in Wyoming.
Electrify America is not committing to time frames. They're not telling us exactly where the stations will be. There are Walmarts across the way. And so, you know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Right. I think it's actually on the press release, I think they were talking about having the network doubled by 2024 to 5. I forget which. I have to look at that in a minute. But Tom,
that was that boost plan that they announced recently, Dominic, where they got a lot of outside money. So they're doubling the network compared to what they were ordered to do in the consent decree. So yeah, that's going to accelerate now, and that's going to be doubled. The plan is between now and 2025, which is nuts. Three years. They already have close to 800 stations, either in the ground, operational, or under construction and permanent. So
I'd really like to see them work on some new hardware. You know, the existing stuff, all bought off the shelf, all pre the big EA rollout. Not really any of it, I think, is designed for long-term use. And none of it's really that nice to use. The cables are really chunky and, you know, they're hard to maneuver. The screens are all really terrible, especially in the daytime. They're starting to peel away. Like, the stations have only been in the ground a couple of years. They all feel old. So when I was road tripping around Europe, the one thing that stood out to me was there were two different station types that seemed amazing. The first is Ionity chooses some beautiful looking stations with these lights on the top, and they're really modern looking. And I was very impressed with the style, the screens, how clean everything was. Whatever they're using over there, we should use here because that was awesome. The second was, and Martin, you may know this charger, but it's the one ENBV uses. It's they have like two or three different ports, and then you can also level two a car all at the same time.
Yeah.
75 kilowatt bricks, and they're 300 kilowatts. And these things never failed. They looked great. And like, it just worked. We should put those in this country.
XPeng's got some nice cabinets coming out too. Maybe we'll talk about those a little bit later.
I want to go make a video as well to show you guys what is new, which is a Nordic company called Kempower. And they're doing is really interesting. So I want to go make a video. The first Kempower installation coming to the UK is probably a month away now. They're in the ground. So I think just being commissioned. And I want to go and shoot that so that I can show you what that is. And again, that is just kind of the next level of thinking about EV charging. So all of the brain, sort of brains and brawn, if you like, are done in the cabinets out the back. So all the cabinets, which are miles away, you know, from where you charge, kind of hidden out back is where all the hard work is done. And then the actual charging stalls are just a very slim post with a screen on top, and the cables are light and they're sprung, and it will load balance across, you know, 8 or 16 chargers on a site. So that's kind of like the next level of thinking about splitting a load, so that if a Porsche Taycan turns up, it can give it 250 kilowatts, but if a, you know, Mazda MX-30 turns up, it can give it 30. And just a really clever way of shifting the available power at that site. So that's coming as well. So there's some really nice, interesting thinking coming with EV charging that's here now and around the corner as well. But isn't it hard? I was talking to the CEO of a charging company called Osprey over here, and he's when he's buying the units, he's thinking about when he's ripping them out as well. And it's just like, it'll be heartbreaking if I was writing that check. But he knows there's going to be a big turnover of charging hardware over the years. And so, yeah, I think he mentioned 5 years. I think he puts them in the ground for 5 years. And he knows that by 2026, there's going to be something latest, greatest that he puts in. But on all of their sites, that's a network called Osprey. On all of their sites, they're going quite big on CHAdeMO, because he said it's his business to be in business of attracting people to his site.
Okay.
And he looks at the car park and CHAdeMO's everywhere. So he said right now he's installing CHAdeMO everywhere,
right.
But he knows that in a few years' time it will be CCS only. Because I was saying, look, just go CCS. Like, man, come on, future-proof yourself. He's like, yeah, but I wouldn't make any money. So right. There's a lot of leafs here.
Also Mitsubishi, yeah, what's the Mitsubishi plug-in hybrid?
Yeah, the Outlander plug-in hybrid,
right.
Still using. Yeah, so, and some early Souls. There's not too many the first edition Souls around. But yeah, so it's interesting that we're at a funny stage for CHAdeMO. So I don't know, charge your leaf at home. Don't rely on rapid charging when you're out and about. You'll probably be all right.
Hey, it's Tom. I heard you got a hold of a Tesla Plaid this week and did some range testing. How'd you like the Plaid?
Yeah, so I've been monitoring Toro to get one of these. And the first one that popped up in New Jersey, I grabbed it. I was only the second person to rent it. And it had just about 1,000 miles on it. And,
hello.
So I got it early on. And I tell you, we did the range test, which is up on Inside EVs now, 70 mile an hour highway range test. And I just finished editing the supercharging video. Now, Kyle put out a supercharging video on out of spec motors for his experience with it. And I wanted to see how it compared. And Kyle, we're dead on. I mean, I think to like within 30 seconds, the car charged the same from 0 to 100.
That's to be expected.
It's like perfect. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, you know, I was worried about overheating or something, you know, but it was absolutely nailed it dead on to what your experience was. I'm going to have that video up today or tomorrow. But yeah, we did the 70 mile an hour highway range test, finished up with 300 miles. I did have the 21 inch arachnid wheels. So this is the lowest range Model S that you could get. The Plaid with the 21s and the big wide tires. The combined EPA range rating is 348. The highway EPA range rating is 341. So we did 300, and that's 12% less than what the highway EPA range rating is. And that's dead on what our experience is pretty much with all Teslas. Usually we're 10 to 12% less than the highway EPA range rating with Teslas. And the interesting thing is with most other brands, we either match the highway range rating, or with some brands like Porsche, for instance, we far exceed the highway EPA range rating. So, I mean, there's absolutely something there with the way that Tesla uses a different protocol to do their EPA range testing than most of the other manufacturers, and which leads you to, you know, it proves that they're going to underperform compared to their EPA range rating, compared to how other vehicles might match it, or at least be closer to what their EPA range rating is. And but I got to talk about the performance just for a minute. You know, Kyle talked a little bit about it. I would just say stupid fast, or, you know, ridiculous. It is nuts. I mean, quite honestly, like, you know, it's crazy. In the last month or so, I've been able to drive the Lucid Dream Edition Performance, the Hummer EV, you know, some of the fastest, the Rivian R1T, you know, cars out there. But the Plaid, it's in another league, you know. Oh, and Taycan Turbo S. I mean, I've driven them all, and recently, so good to compare when you do back-to-back, because you sometimes forget. The right. Plaid is insane. I tell you one thing, if you're lucky enough to buy a Plaid, do not give it to your 19 or 20-year-old kid to drive, because they're just not ready.
You think it's dangerously fast, though? I don't think it's scary, because any lock on the wheel, it doesn't let you have power.
Yeah, but it breaks.
Yeah, this is what's dangerously fast about it, Kyle. It goes 0 to 100 in about 4.1 or 4.2 seconds. And somebody, when you mash that accelerator, before your brain registers how fast you're going 100 miles an hour. And now you can't stop, and you can't turn.
Yeah, the braking's a real problem on that car. Now, I mean, look, one stop, it'll get into ABS, but it's still a heavy car to slow down.
Right. It's just how, you know, when you're young, you know, I don't know, I drove like an idiot when I was a kid. And
yeah, so did I. And, you know, you're just not used to the scenery passing you that quickly from a standstill, you know. And I live in a rural area. There's country roads here. The only thing I have to worry about is deer, quite honestly, you know, jumping out in front of me. There's no cars pulling out of driveways or anything. So I got to play around with it and do a couple real serious runs. And I think I did four consecutive 0 to 100 runs, like back to back to back. And you do that.
Allegedly.
Like, Yeah. These rural roads some of them are actually private roads here, farming roads that I know the people. So I could drive however I want on them. And back to back to back. And I started to get dizzy. I had to pull over because, it felt like the blood drained from my head. And I've never had that feeling from any car. And I've driven the fastest cars available, multiple runs. And I had to sit there for a minute and be like, all right, in the wrong hands, this is really a problem. Now, any fast car in the wrong hands is a problem. But I think the Plaid just takes it to that next level. And I just want to urge people, if you're lucky enough, if you're affluent enough to get a Plaid, don't let your kids drive it. I wouldn't personally, because
it's a kid mode.
It's really crazy.
All right.
Kyle has a different opinion.
I have a different opinion. So here's my opinion. It is, if you get in any other car with 1,020 horsepower, it's a crazy death machine that's trying to kill you every second of the way. It demands respect, because just getting it to get the power down is sketchy. So that to me is like, that's a level of dangerous that's like really enjoyable, because you're like, oh my God, I'm going to die. That's great. But the Plaid.
I didn't say it wasn't enjoyable, Kyle.
No. So the Plaid is, I think, the easiest car to control with that much power. By the way, Tom, I was talking, I won't say who at Lucid, but I was talking to someone at Lucid. And confirmation, the cars we experienced didn't have max power like you and I suspected. So,
Because the car we drove was supposed to do the quarter mile in like 0.2 of a second slower than the Plaid we drove. And there's it was comparable to that.
No. And that's true. So we have confirmation. We did not experience the full power of the Dream P. And so that's probably why Lucid was being cagey and not putting it in the maxi max mode. So look, that's just some information. They never told me not to say anything, so I'm sharing it with our audience. The other thing, so the Plaid is, certainly look, you need to be on top of it. Things, you just transform and like go shooting down a straightaway so fast. You do need to actively think about braking zones. And so, I love the Plaid. No question. All about it. I just don't think it's like dangerously fast, in my opinion.
Drive enjoyable. You know how to drive fast, though. That's the thing.
That's possible. That's possible. Like, but
you're a good driver.
You have to look at it compared to other cars with that much power. So anything with 1,000 horsepower, like I said, it's a scary death machine. This is like a comfortable cruiser that, like, when the wheel is straight, it lets you have the power. It's not like trying to rip you off the road when you floor it. Sure, the front end gets a little light. You know, there's a little torque steer, what to be expected. But yeah, maybe for like kids. Look, I've never trained a kid to drive. I obviously don't have children. My kids are furry. So just have dogs. And so, yeah, maybe that's not a great idea to let your child have high.
My point is that the other cars that are close to this fast, that can go 0 to 100 in 4 seconds, they're like the Bugatti Veyrons and crazy expensive supercars that you wouldn't expect the parents to flip the keys to the kid on a weekend and take a roll. But the Model S Plaid, that's like a car that like affluent regular families will own, and it'll be like their daily driver. And that's the difference to me. It could lull you into this. When you're in a supercar, a hypercar, you know this thing's crazy fast and you might take things more seriously. But when you're in the Plaid, it's like, this is just like the regular, this is our family car. And you stomp on it and you're going faster than you realize you are, quicker than your brain can process it. Now, you're in a different lap. Now, Kyle disagrees with me and I see his face. But that's okay, because you understand that. This is what you do for a living. But other people don't understand that, I think. And you are so fast, so quickly, you hit 100 miles an hour. And at 100 miles an hour, even if the road bends a little bit, you're screwed. You're going off the road. You're plowing over that mailbox and you're driving into somebody's living room.
Come on. I don't know about that. I think a Model 3 performance is still stupidly fast. And I see, 16-year-olds getting these cars, and not all of them are just stuffing them into trees. I mean, I think Tesla really has like the most aggressive ESP systems, the most amazing forward collision warning for these types of things. Look, time will tell. We'll see. Is there going to be a higher rate of accident with Plaid than dual motor as a percentage for each car sold? Let's see. Let's revisit that in a year if we can get that data. I bet it's not going to be that much different, but we'll see. Tom, I'm not.
I mean, it was a blast to drive.
1,000 horsepower is a ton of responsibility.
It was a blast to drive. It was the first time I drove in a car, and doing a few launches, I felt like I was getting sick. And now maybe it's because I'm getting older.
No, it made me sick.
Yeah, and I did launches in like the Taycan Turbo S, you know, back to back to back, and it felt fast, and you got that queasy feeling, but I didn't have to pull over and like get my composure. Because I had to wear, you need like a jet fighter's pressure suit to properly drive a Model S planned, because you need to squeeze that blood back up into your head. But in any event, I don't want to harp on that too long. The thing is insanely, brutally fast. And if you have the opportunity to drive
to
one,
100
respect
is
it.
Insane, right, Tom? When you nail that thing at like 45, it's just crazy.
Just cruising on a highway, if you stomp on it 40, 50 miles an hour, let's say you're getting onto the highway, you pass everybody like they're hitting the brakes.
Yeah.
And you almost aren't ready for it. And you should be ready for it because you know what you're driving. But like, it's nuts, guys. It's nuts. So that's all I was saying is, I mean, it's a blast to drive, but it was the first time after driving a car, I had to sit there and think like, is this thing safe? Because it's that fast. But anyway,
any other car that does this, though, does it with drama, right? So if you hear a car on an on-ramp and it's a Bugatti, it's a Lamborghini, it's a Ferrari, you know, it's noisy and it's aggressive and you can hear someone driving it quickly and you'll probably get out of their way as well. Look, the internet is full of people pulling out of car shows in their supercars, and there's like groups of guys on the side of the road whistling them, and they're like, hey, see you later, guys, and they floor it and they spin it and go in a ditch, right? That's like, there's like a million of those videos where Lamborghinis are in a ditch, but that's because those cars have much drama about it, whereas what you guys have experienced with the Plaid is just effortless, right? You're at 40, you stomp on it, and then you're doing 100, and that's the great thing about electric cars. But you know, like, I would let my wife drive that car, but she wouldn't get in a Lamborghini because they're hard to work because even the seating position, but you know, it crunches into first gear. There's something mechanical about it. She's like, I'm not driving that car, but a Model S Plaid, she'd be like, yes, absolutely fine. But she wouldn't appreciate what's about to happen, but that's because it's electric. So there's just no drama.
Yeah. And 40 to 100 happens in like 2.5 seconds, Martin.
Wow.
it's nuts. But anyway, so getting back to the range test, we did 300 miles, and which in my opinion, that's fine. I mean, 300 miles at 70 miles an hour, it didn't come close to the EPA. I wasn't expecting it to, but you get that kind of crazy performance.
Right.
You know, you've got this car that's the quickest production car ever made, and it still goes 300 miles per charge. You know, we average like 3.3 miles per kilowatt hour at 70 miles an hour. Now, you know, most people might go a little bit faster on the open road, but we standardize this test at 70. And, you know, 300 miles, it's this, the only vehicle we've done so far that actually has gone further was when I did my long range dual motor Model 3, and that did 310 miles in our test. So listen, you know, hats off to Tesla to put that kind of performance and also have it have the efficiency as good as it is.
Right. There's also a new Model S record. I don't know if it's like official yet. I don't want to like overstate.
I haven't heard officially yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, there's a new cross country of that site. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. Record. I guess the team will be sharing details soon. And so this is just an early congratulatory message to them.
Cryptic. Is that in the long range?
Long range dual motor in both directions. And then the direction from New York to LA was a little bit quicker, the proper way. So it's all good.
Yep.
And pretty amazing for sure.
The yoke, right?
Wow. Right.
Wow. On. Cool.
Cool.
All right. So let's move on to some news, shall we? I guess the big news of the week is no doubt Hertz, the car rental company, has ordered 100,000 Tesla Model 3s in a deal worth around $4.5 billion. It's a little different from typical fleet deals. Typically, automakers sell the fleets at discount prices. It makes their sales figures look good and adds to scale and helps them lower their manufacturing costs. In this case, however, they're apparently paying full price. The time scale is pretty short too. They're all to be delivered by the end of next year, and deliveries will begin shortly if they haven't started already. I think they probably have started already.
I think you can rent them now, actually, according to their website.
Right. So another interesting thing about this deal is that it's allowed Hertz to make another deal with Uber, giving them access to 50,000 Teslas. So Uber will rent them to its drivers for $334 a week, including insurance and maintenance. And that program begins November 1st, or Monday, in select cities like Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, Washington. But it will be nationwide in a few weeks. So if you're like an Uber driver and you want to drive a Tesla Model 3, you may be able to if they can get you the car. You know, everyone's waiting for cars. But yeah. So on the charging side, Hertz will be installing chargers not only at its airport locations, but also in suburbs where it has offices located. CEO Mark Fields, used to be a CEO of Ford not so long ago, says that by the end of the year, they'll have access to over 3,000 chargers in 65 markets. It's a little unclear if those are all new installations, if they're talking also about Electrify America installations or something. But and Uber is said to be working with Wallbox for charging stations. Now, it sounded like some of those would be in the community. I was thinking Wallbox. Okay, they're going to be in drivers' houses. They're going to, you know, start installing a lot of home charging equipment in houses. But listening to the interview with them, they had the CEO from Uber and Hertz on CNN. That's in our post, actually. The little video is in our post about the story. And they were saying that the Wallbox ones might be through the community as well, just where people can get a charge, because not everyone has a garage and a driveway. So this was enough to spike Tesla's share price. It was already close to an all-time high after its strong third quarter financial report. So it was up another $40 yesterday, closing at like $1,077 a share. That gives them a market cap of market capitalization of over $1 trillion, which is kind of insane. But wait, there's more. Uber is very confident that it will have strong interest in the cars, and they may increase that number to 150,000 over the next few years. So I don't, Tom, what's your takeaway from all this? I know there's like a lot there.
Well, you know, I love this because for the last 10 years, whenever I went anywhere, I always used to call every rental car agency and see if they had an electric vehicle available. And nobody ever did until really recently, the recent years. It makes a lot of sense. You know, I think that the overall operating cost is going to be a tremendous savings for them. I'm surprised it took this long for a big brand like this to really jump on the bandwagon and make a huge purchase on electric vehicles. So, you know, I think it makes all the sense in the world if they can iron out the charging and make sure. I mean, Teslas already have, you know, the most ubiquitous charging network. So, you know, that's a big advantage there. But it still even has to get better if they're going to put this many vehicles out there for people to use. They have to be really accessible to be able to quickly charge them up. And they can also work in with, as far as they have all the stats and statistics on how far the average person drives and all that. So they can actually build something in where they have a safety net for drivers that are not going to be exceeding the range of the vehicle. Plenty of times people rent cars for a day and it's not a road trip and they're going to drive it like 20 or 30 miles, but you know, they flew into an area and they just need to hit a couple meetings. And I mean, that can all be built into, it could be a question on how far you're going to drive, where you're going to drive, just so they make sure the customer doesn't end up in an area that might be, you know, charging challenged.
Right. I was surprised there was a fair amount of information on the Hertz website itself, you know, like instructions about how to charge Teslas or this and that, all the controls. There's like a lot of little videos and how to instructions. Hey, buddy on the chat mentions that in Europe, nobody wants a four-door Mercedes E-Class because it's a taxi and don't think it's good for regular sales. So, I mean, putting your cars in fleets, in rental fleets is like, you know, that's what like us Altima territory, basically. It doesn't do anything for the prestige of your car. I don't know. Is
that- but the Model 3 is already there. I don't think people view it as a prestigious car. They're on every corner. You see them littered around. No one washes them. Drive around LA. They're all just dirty, nasty Model 3s on every corner because it's just – it's a new Prius. But it's been this way for years. I don't think this is going to affect perception at all.
Right.
Over and I wonder how they're going to hold up because, you know, rental cars get the crap beat out of them. And, you know, Teslas, it's one of the things that people have commented on, you know, continuously that, you know, sometimes the fit and finish, sometimes the build quality, you know, isn't up to par on some of the legacy OEMs. I know when I rented one car once to do range testing from a local Toro here, it was a Model 3. It was beaten up pretty bad. The plastic was popping off the center console. Even the B pillar on the inside, it just kept falling off and hit me in the head, and I had to keep pushing it back and snapping it on. And I don't know what happened to that car, but you know, it'll be interesting to see if they hold up as well as some of the, you know, legacy brands do that have, you know, 100 years of refining and making sure every snap and every connection is it can hold up to the test of time.
I think they will. I think they're going to hold up really well. I mean, I've put now three Teslas through a very high mileage daily driving aggressive program with luggage and dogs and people inside the car and have really had no issues that would be you know, like my car is 100,000 miles. It looks amazing. I mean, you would have no idea what that car has been through. I think if any car has a good chance of being sturdy and holding up well over time, maybe having this new generation, this new screwed together after all these updates, Tom, it might help. But the interior is pretty Spartan. Everything's really hard plastics. The materials they use for the seats are pretty hard wearing. I think it's going to be great. And I think they're going to look awesome. And guess what? This is only going to be amazing in the used market for people trying to get into cheaper EVs down the line, because these companies run the cars for a year or two and then cycle them out. Right now is the longest time rental car companies have had cars in their fleets because they haven't been able to get new ones.
Right.
Yeah. So I think the used market is, you know, if you have a Model 3, now's the time to sell it, where delivery times are as long as possible. We're in this new car market. And I have a friend of mine, he works for us. He is selling his Model 3 for more than what he paid for it new 2 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, although Carvana just offered me 26 grand for my Model 3 Performance, so I'm not buying into this whole they hold their value really well thing. No accidents, clean car, but they must have watched some YouTube videos.
They know it's you. But let's talk about the Uber deal a little bit. I think this is so good because firstly for the drivers. So there's studies out there that people who drive for a living have, you know, worse health than other people because fumes come in from the car you are driving. Fumes enter the vehicle. People think, oh, you know, some truck blew past me and it stinks, but the fumes of the car you're driving come in. So it's fantastic for the driver's health. There's studies out there to do with drivers who drive electric vehicles versus diesel, and it shows they are more relaxed, less stressed. The driving experience is better. It's smoother. It's quieter. So there's lots of health benefits for those Uber drivers. A lot of Uber drivers will be in areas where they need to rent those vehicles. Lots of people own their cars, but lots of Uber drivers need to rent them. Some of those are in economic areas that EVs aren't in at the moment, because you can't disguise the fact EVs are expensive. And if you go to, you know, some disadvantaged areas, you don't see any EVs, because that's the last thing. If you can't, you know, if you can't eat on a Sunday night before you get paid or whatever, the last thing you're thinking about is buying an electric vehicle. And so it gets EVs, and it gets people who are then riding in the back of them are going to start so many conversations with the driver of, oh wow, this is electric, because as much as we all live in this world, lots of other people don't. So the 50,000 Uber thing is fantastic. I don't know why they just didn't buy 50,000 Teslas themselves. Something to do, somebody thinks it's to do with the fact that Uber don't want to own those vehicles and get into the whole we own vehicles, we have staff, etc., the gig economy. So it's easier to rent them from Hertz. It seems like there's value being lost in that chain. Like, okay, well, Hertz are making their cut and then Uber, but still, either way, it's an amazing bit of news that's going to get so many electric people in electric cars. It's cheaper to run them, so the drivers make more money. They need to charge them though, and that's going to be a challenge.
I was just looking at the chat. I was just looking at a little sidetracked. I was looking at the chat and people were talking about the federal tax.
That was Louis Diaz asked, did the tax credit limit of 200,000 get increased? And that, no. Because that would allow Tesla to get the incentive again. And right. No, Louis, it hasn't. There's been talk. There's been a couple proposals with the infrastructure bill. Nothing's been passed yet. We really don't know where that's going to end up. So let's see.
If it does pass, so I mentioned this, I think probably last week or the week before, when it does pass, this tax credit thing is going to be like a lot better than I thought it was. It's going
to
be
it's cash on the hood, as Tom likes to say. I love that phrase.
Well, see,
it's not a tax credit anymore.
It's a refundable tax credit.
It's not cash on the hood, Martin.
So you still have to wait. You still have to wait until you do your taxes. Yeah. But
I thought it was disconnected from taxes.
No. But it's still connected, but it's also you get all the money. So if you have like a car that would qualify for the full amount in the language of the bill as it stands right now, a union made Chevy Bolt, I guess you could get $12,500. So if you owe the government $3,000, you know, you get that back, but then you get a check for the balance of that money as well.
Okay, so that's better. Well, I stand corrected. I'm sorry.
Kind of like a rebate. It's just delayed.
Yeah, but at least you get all the money. That's what the point is. Right. But you still got to front it.
Well, I think
that's the problem right there. Well, that's my problem.
Yeah. But when you do the financing,
it doesn't help economically disadvantaged people that are trying to get in EVs. They have to put the money out up front, and then they get it back later.
Yeah. What financial institutions kind of take that into account?
No,
you're
not at all.
You're speculating. You know,
you can sign a document promising this money from this check, you know, from the government.
No, but financial lending company is going to say, hey, give me the car now and then take, you know, send me the rest of your check when you get it.
We'll give you a no interest $12,000 loan for eight months. You know, you know, and it just makes it complicated. If it was a clean cash on the hood, this $30,000 car is now, you know, $17,500, then that's it. It's easy and people can afford it. They're still pushing it down the road and it makes things complicated. The car still goes out of the showroom, off the showroom floor at a higher price point than the comparable ICE car, you know, and that's what makes this. To me, I'm really disappointed with where this is ending up. I mean, you know, it's terrible what form we're taking. Even the whole union thing, which we're not going to get into today, but the fact that they can't change it into a rebate. They're giving everybody the money back anyway. Right. Like, there's no it doesn't matter what your tax liability is. You're getting the money back, but you have to wait for it. And that's just not, you know, this is wrong. In my opinion, I think it's terrible and I'm super disappointed in it. This is going to discourage people. It's going to continue to discourage people that don't have a lot of money to get into an EV.
It's basically the same as a rebate. So why not do it, you know, down rather than delay it?
That's how it is here. It's not connected with our personal tax. We don't have to start getting involved with our tax payments just to get money off an EV. It's pretty complicated.
Tom,
where's the actual incentive just broadly? Because I don't even fully understand it. Where's the actual incentive for the government to have people driving electric cars? Like why are they giving us a tax credit to drive an EV? Like what's the benefit to them?
Well, you know, where the government is trying to promote clean air vehicles, for health reasons, we're trying to reduce our global emissions. I mean, that's the whole gist behind
it. We're in a climate catastrophe.
We're trying to.
Okay, so it's all climate based. Is where the money
and health? No, health also, because there's a lot of statistics that show people that live in areas that are close to highways have higher rates.
I understand the benefits. I'm just curious, what benefits is the government seeing where it's worth $7,000 to $12,000 for people to drive EVs? I thought originally it was to help companies as a testing project back in the day. So you're like, hey, are people going to be interested in these cars? And then, you know, now that there's enough interest, I'm not quite sure why there's a need for more tax credit to sell the cars if they're already this good. In my impression, Tesla has been without a tax credit. They've made an attractive electric vehicle and they're selling every single one that they can make. You know, that's kind of step one. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is just a topic for another show, and maybe we should have someone on from the U.S. government to explain this. But I guess I don't see the benefit of our general tax dollars going to have people driving electric cars as a whole. in my impression.
Right. Mm. I mean,
well, I don't think we're at the point where the cars are equal price wise. You know, it's still Tesla has come out and proven it can be done. Okay. They're the pretty much, you know, one of the only, maybe the only one that's put out a car that's as good or equal to its comparative gas car, you know, price wise. And the legacy brands are still trying to drive down that cost. Now, I don't think it's far. I think these rebates and incentives can sunset in 3 or 4 years. I mean, I think we're that close. I think 2025, right, maybe 2026, that's it, end them. But between now and then, there's still the we're going to get there with full electrification, but this is going to help usher it in a little bit quicker. Right. And as Dominic points out, you know, hopefully, you know, curtail a climate catastrophe as best we can. I mean, we're headed in that direction, I think, regardless, but maybe we'll mitigate it a little bit at this point. So,
yeah, maybe we'll see. I don't know. I think I'd much rather see a lot of that money going towards charging infrastructure, which I know there is a lot of money going towards charging infrastructure, rather than like, you know, someone that is very advantaged just buying EVs and taking all the tax credits. And look, you can game the system that way. My dad's bought 3 or 4 ID4s in the last short window of time, and he's not doing it to gain the tax credit. He's just like, oh, actually, I bought the base one, I want the nicer one. And then he actually made money by getting another one. And he's like, oh, the all-wheel drive came out, let's do that. And then he's making money. And look, it's all in the right. And I understand that's a unique situation, but I think the cars are good enough. They'll sell everything they're making now. We're in such supply shortages. Why not just end all tax credits for EVs? I know that I'm very much in the minority here, and I'm not a company analyst. This is not my world. I review cars. But I just like, why not just end it all and then just help us build a nice infrastructure so the ones that people actually do buy, they can get around. I mean, you still can't drive from here in my house to Montana. I know no one lives here in the Midwest, but it's like large sections of our country you can't get around. And the government's like, here's all this money to buy these cars that you can't get around it. It doesn't make any sense to me personally.
Right. Well, I mean, the shortage is you know, just from the last year or two, and it was kind of unforeseen. I mean, they'll be catching up with, I mean, there'll be plenty of cars to buy in a short period of time, I think. But the way I look at it is that every dollar that we invest now is dollars that we won't have to spend on recovering from climate related, you know, disasters down the road. So I look at all this stuff as an investment, like in renewable energy, electrification. It's like investment.
I'm sure there are studies out there, but I wonder if the number of EVs on our road today are actually. So here's my thing. Inner city emissions, I love reducing, because I've noticed, you know, just even walking around my town, when like a smelly car goes by, I'm like, oh, that's just terrible. Why do I want to smell that exhaust? But are we actually making a difference with the EVs on the road today? Versus, you know, 10 years ago, I don't know. And I'm sure there's some difference, but I'm curious what that actual climate benefit is.
It's a small difference right now, because we have to get before we can get to 50% of cars on the road, we have to, you know, we're at 2% or 4%, depending, you know, where you're at. But
yeah, it seems like a lot of money to spend for a small benefit, in my opinion.
Right.
I think there's other areas. I don't know what
the actual amount is, but well, I mean, we spend a lot of money on.
We can do rebates and infrastructure. You know,
there you go. Yeah. Let's just spend the money.
Yeah.
Well, the infrastructure is coming, though. It's 500,000 charge points as part of the plan, up from 100,000 odd at the moment. So, where and what?
Do we know the charging provider, the power level, the
location?
No,
it's not yet. We're nowhere near.
Yeah.
We're nowhere near signing it. We're nowhere near signing it off. And there's so many compromises and negotiations still to do.
Yeah. It's hard. A lot of it's still speculative. Even this, you know, this tax credit, we don't even know if that's going to make it through in the language that it has now and the amounts that it has now.
It's such early days. And so I don't know. It just seems like my opinion is, if we just ended the tax credit for EVs, I think it would make it a much easier situation. And they'll still sell everything they can make, in my opinion. I think they will. Right. The cars have gotten that good. I mean, maybe, Tom, what do you think? Do you think if we ended the tax credit, overall sales of EVs would measurably drop, or there's still such a demand at this point where we could sell everything that's going on the lots?
Well, I think we have to remove the fact that we're in this really weird place right now, Kyle, where everything is so, you know, supply constrained, and look beyond that. And if you look at the studies where their areas had rebates and incentives, and then they removed them. The EV sales dropped dramatically. It happened in Colorado. It happened in Atlanta. And I mean, Atlanta went like from selling, you know, X amount to 1/10 of what they sold like the following
year. So people don't actually want the cars then. They just want the tax credits.
Well, here's the thing. And one of your points is valid, that the cars are better now than maybe they were a couple of years ago when we saw these dramatic drops in sales once the rebates ended. But I mean, take a look at an ID4. We both love the ID4. But admittedly, priced at $40,000, you can get a comparable ICE car for around $30,000. That is pretty much the same utility. So I think we still need them.
And it would take you a long time to make up that fuel savings, to be honest.
I think what would be
nice.
That's
what I'm saying. You wouldn't. So if it doesn't get that tax credit right now, it's not equal. And that's why I think we still need them. And I only think we need them for a couple of years. I have no problem sunsetting these in 3 or 4 years. I think we're that close, but I don't think we're there yet. And we just need that last push for a couple more years. And then we're going to get over that hump. And then go ahead, head to head, you know, you compete, buy this one or buy that one. It's up to you because we'll have price power.
I mean, I think that's up to the automakers. Make a comparable product that's good and priced well, and people will buy it. You know, one car spending $12,000 of government money. Is it really, are we getting $12,000 of benefit from that one car in climate? I don't know. Maybe. Look, I'm not an expert on this. It just seems like way too much money to be spending for cars that, in theory, at this point, 10 years on from the start of this revolution, should be good enough for people to just want anyway. And it's already been proven with Tesla, my perception.
And Tesla is 66% of your market. You know, it's a different market over here where they're third in the market on the year so far behind VW and Stellantis. So when people, it's a bit like, I think Tesla is a byword for electric vehicles in the US. And so Tesla is so dominant there that when you talk about EVs, you just think Tesla. Now, how are they doing with no tax credit? Absolutely fine. In fact, they keep raising the prices of vehicles and people keep buying them. And it's a segue to the next one. But also look at the Norway model. So rather than give people all the money off EVs in Norway, they just went, well, we'll just tax the things that are going to end up polluting and that we're going to need to clean up at some point. So we'll tax combustion. So, hey, you can
love
still
the
buy.
Norway model. That's like, a great model.
Right. And also, by the way, if you don't know, Norway, incredibly affluent because of oil and exploration. And so their sovereign wealth fund, the biggest, built on fossil fuels, but also a country where, you know, it's like $12 for a beer. So we've been there once and we'd love to go back, but we're still saving up. It's an enormously expensive country to go to. So
but maybe people make higher money, more money as well. But
okay, so it's all relative.
It's all relative. Yeah,
it's all relative. Things, but you know, they just put like 25% on top of gas cars, and we're like, so what do you want to buy, that or an electric car? And everyone went, oh, I'll buy electric then, just because it's, you know, cheaper. So that's the other way of doing it. Anyway, hopefully that leads us on to more expensive Teslas, which is our next story.
Yeah, so while we're talking Tesla, we should also mention that they've raised their prices yet again. Now, a standard range model, standard range plus Model 3 is $43,990. That's $45,190 with destination. Last December, less than a year ago, a Model 3 was $36,490 or $7,500 cheaper. That's a heck of a price raise. So to make it worse, if you order now, delivery may only happen next September. That hurts.
That's a joke. You need to get Austin open as quick as possible.
That hurts. Anyway,
that's a demand problem right now. But guess what? I the Hertz thing is going to strap.
That's what I'm saying. That hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. Yeah, it does hurt.
I know. But people in the Tesla forums were like, "Oh, the Hertz deal won't affect your delivery timing." It's 100,000 cars.
It's affecting delivery.
Of course it does.
But
of course it does. They'll make 900,000 cars this year if they're lucky, and they're an absolute stretch.
Their total output right now is annualized at 1 million cars, but now Texas is about to come online, so they'll be taking over taking up some of the slack from Model Y, which will allow them to produce more Model 3s in Fremont. I think that's what they're going to do anyway. That's what I would do.
Yeah,
of course.
So, can we talk Tesla FSD beta for a half a second?
Let me finish this price increase.
Sure, go right ahead. I just didn't want to miss this one.
Right. So Model Y long range is also up to $2,000 to $56,090, And that's $8,500 more than last December. Model S and Model much. Y long range are up $5,000. So $94,190 and $104,990 respectively. And yeah, it's a lot of money. But Kyle, yes, you drove FSD. Beta. Is that what you want to talk about?
Yes. You have to include the beta in that.
Must say beta.
FSD beta, otherwise, right. Yeah, definitely include beta because
the fans get very upset if
we'll
you don't use that word.
We'll get sued instantly. yeah, no, it was an interesting system. A neighbor here in town had the new, brand new 10.3.1, which I think is the next big iteration from the one Tom experienced recently. And Tom, I know you spoke about it, but what was your general impression of the system where you drove it? You also drove it in like California, right? Where it's like supposed to do really well. So what was it like for you?
It was nerve wracking, to be honest with you. And I wasn't driving. I was a passenger and I was concerned that the driver wasn't going to be quick to take over. Like we're talking during this and I kept looking at him like, are you ready to take over? Because, you know, it was able to perform some tasks that impressed me. So I was like, oh, wow. Like that's pretty good. Like it made a left onto a really busy two-way street that it wasn't a highway, but the cars were blowing by at both directions at like 50 miles an hour. It's an intersection that I wouldn't even really like to do. I mean, of course I could do it, but I wouldn't be pleased to have to make that turn every day. And it really impressed me. But then simple like lane changes, like it wouldn't go through a red light. There was a green light where it stopped at a green light and the driver had to accelerate through it. And then it couldn't get into a left-hand turn lane. It tried to do it too late and now it's too late. And it was halfway in the lane and the lane where cars are driving. So overall, you know, I would give it like a D plus, C minus, you know, I was not happy with it at all. I mean, it's amazing to me that it even does what it does. Okay. But that's not the point. It's not there for me to be amazed. It's there to get you from point A to point B. And as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't do it.
Yeah. So I experienced it here in Colorado and, you know, a lot of people, you know, my question was, is this a reasonable test of the system in a place where there aren't many FSD beta cars? I put a video up on YouTube the other day. Of course, it's the most controversial video we've ever hosted. You know, I think we have tons of down likes, a lot of up likes too. I mean, it's like 30% down votes. But I think it's just, you know, it's just Tesla people who are like trying to save their stock, because in no realm of possibility is this thing even close to being safe on public roads in the hands of the general public. Now, if you were a trained safety driver that passed a course that understands the system, that understands displayed driving behavior and general, customary driving decisions based on region, then I think it's fine for a trained person to have the system and do whatever they need to do to back end test this system. But my experience was like yours, Tom. Occasionally it did things really well. It was amazing at the straight line bits because that's just normal autopilot. But anytime we had to make a maneuver, interchange, things like this, there was at least something on the minor side very wonky where it would be odd on the steering or grab the brakes midway through, to the point where it was just a full on crazy, you know, like had a death wish, like wanted to pull in cars and drive down wrong way streets, and you know, wasn't near it. And look, I get the, yeah, this was 10.3.1. I get the argument that this is a beta system. The second argument is, you know, a beta system that I put on my phone with pre-release software isn't going to just go out of its way and try and shove me into oncoming traffic. This is a much greater responsibility that has the exact same amount of training that I had to go through to get the beta software on my cell phone. And so to me, that seems a little bit sketchy. And I was very disappointed with the overall system performance. But beyond that, I'm disappointed in Tesla's ability to select proper drivers that are trained through a proper program to manage a system like this. Gaming an FSD score, safety score, by either driving down the highway for 200 miles with no one in front of you, or by avoiding stop signs and driving around traffic so you don't have hard braking, that's no classification that you're qualified to handle a such an aggressive driver assistance system. And
yeah, resetting or doing a reset before you get home. That's like that's the, in the Tesla community. Like it's a running joke now that if something happens that your score gets dinked, you just hold down both scroll wheels and do a reset, and therefore it won't upload. And it's like there's ways of gaming it, and that's just not cool, right? That's not a good way of selecting how to get safe people.
Yeah, it's definitely it doesn't seem to be ready for like wide distribution, and I think they need to be very careful about who they give it to. Actually, too, I saw a video last night with somebody where they let the car, you know, go way off the path that it should have been on. Like, you should not.
But you are relying on the drive, and there's some really good people.
Yeah, some people
that are trying it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but send them to a course. If Tesla's really worth $1 trillion and this is part of their future, make sure the people go to California, spend days working with the test engineers that are doing this internally, that then get certified in the J standard for autonomous vehicle safety driver. There is a standard for this that requires your hands to be in a certain position, your eyes on the road. I haven't read it. I don't know what it is. All I know is I'm a random person who borrowed someone's car, didn't sign any waivers because it was already on that car, put some GoPros in it, and then let the car do stupid things for YouTube because I wanted to see what it would do. And that is just ludicrous to me. So look, you guys know me. I'm not Mr. Safety Conscious. I was just saying the Plaid is relatively safe for the power levels, and it does demand respect. But this to me is a whole nother realm where I think it's playing with people's perceptions more so than the actual benefit of the system. And by the way, there is no benefit to this system right now. It is way less fun and way slower to get across a city than me just driving a car, you know, to the grocery store. So,
right.
You know, if Tesla truly can run all of this learning in shadow mode, just learn without the system and just see what people do and then test what they would do against normal drivers. I don't really see how this system being deployed in public is really helping anything. The next point and my last point is I don't think that Tesla is really taking user data and improving the system based off of that. There's a section of road I've asked a few Tesla owners, real true hardcore fans that I know that live here that, you know, totally disagree with me on this FSD stuff, but we're still friendly and friends and I love my Tesla and like, it's fine. We can disagree and still get along great. There's a section of road on I-25, the main corridor up and down Denver up to Fort Collins into Wyoming. And tons of Teslas, you know, here in Fort Collins and Denver, you know, hundreds a day pass through here, I'm sure. And there's one overpass where it slams on the brakes every single time. It goes from, if no one's behind you, you'll go from 85 miles an hour down to 35. And it just slams on the brakes. And you have to either raise the speed limit manually because it thinks the speed limit dropped, disengage autopilot, or push it with the accelerator pedal, which I do. I know it's coming up. I just hover the accelerator pedal. And if every Tesla has done this for at least 2 years on, let's just say, an average of 100 cars a day, you would think somewhere someone would learn.
Right.
And they haven't. So this is just one example of many. There's another situation where when I'm leaving the airport on the ring road, it tries to take an exit every time. And at the last second goes, oh, I don't want to go there, and go back on the road and like full on swings the car back onto the road every time for years. I don't think it's learning.
I like your suggestion of training the drivers, you know, who actually use this system. I like that idea. It's not like Tesla doesn't have the money to spend.
It should be mandatory and legally required to have safety drivers monitoring the system and then keeping these people honest. And still, even then, it's not perfect. We've seen the Uber driver crash with the safety driver. Right. There will be accidents, but let's do as much as possible when we're testing this type of technology to make sure it's as safe as possible, in my opinion. Right. And the car just blows past speed limits and blows through stop signs. The car's literally programmed to not stop at stop signs, which last time I checked isn't legal. And
the
people were saying,
is that what you're saying?
That it's like customary here or there.
It's got to stop. I mean,
A rolling stop is an oxymoron. You're either rolling or you're stopped. And so the sign says stop, but just verbatim. That means don't move. And I think it's for 3 seconds, at least here in Colorado.
Stop, one, two, go. That's what I do. That's how my mom taught me.
You have to. And look, maybe when I'm driving, I'll roll through a stop sign here or there for customary driving. That's fine. I'm a human. I'm supposed to be a flawed driver, right? Isn't that why we're developing this technology? Make it safer. Make it follow the rules and make it more fun.
Right. All right. Can we got to move on to the story, but that was good.
Sorry
that was, no, that was great. It was
good. One quick follow up on that, Dom.
Okay, sure.
One of the other members of the Inside EVs editorial team reached out to the Toro driver that rented me the Model S and then gave me the ride in his Model Y with FSD beta, and because he wanted to rent it.
Right.
He was told that shortly after my video with him driving, Tesla revoked his FSD beta.
Right.
And so, I mean, he didn't do anything wrong.
My guy still has it.
Yeah. What's that?
My guy still has it. I checked this morning. Well, he's like, somehow they still put it, they have it on the car.
Yeah. And you know, we didn't do anything crazy with it. It was just a quick, you know, 10 minute or 15 minute, you know, I had the camera set up and, you know, so that's kind of wonky if you ask me. I mean, you allow the videos that post that show, oh, this is great, it's fantastic, look what it does. But then you pull access to somebody who just does a regular recording. We didn't set out to do anything bad or to make Tesla look bad. It was just like, okay, let's set the navigation from here to here and record it. And that's what we did. And, you know, it appears, I haven't spoken to him, but it appears as though they revoked his FSD beta privilege.
What a shame.
It'll be
what
curious to see if the video I saw last night with this guy letting the car go and, you know, out of the lane facing like another line of traffic coming at him. They were all stopped. He wasn't in any danger, but it was like, you know, I want to see if this person gets their beta removed as well, because that, you know, if they review that video, I mean, if I was reviewing that video, I'd say nope, away.
Yeah. But really, because so here's the thing, you know, part of this is testing the system for video, which was my goal. My goal was not to train the system. It was not to, you know, try and have a safety thing. But the goal of my video was, let's see what the system will do given the scenario, and I will step in before things get too crazy. And I had to step in from time to time, but I really let this car do some really stupid things that I'm like, that's close, but I know we're not going to crash, so we're going. And that was just a decision I made personally, right? And so people will have different level of comfort for that kind of things. Was this guy just recording the video to show the current status of the system, or was he testing it? Because I believe if you're a beta tester, you agree to Tesla stuff, it's to take over anytime the car does something not normal, which would mean that the system would be practically unusable around, at least based off of my experience in my town. You would just take over every time you have to make a turn.
I don't know. I can't speak to their motivation, but the video had a provocative title. Some of the previous videos had provocative titles. I don't know what their motivation was, but yeah. Hey, we should listen to our sponsor, Mr. Martin Lee.
I'm not the sponsor, but I'll play. It's not like you should listen to me. No, but I'll play it. Here we go.
This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
All right, so let's talk some Range Rover. So Land Rover has just debuted the latest generation. Nice. Sorry?
I was just saying, this is so nice.
Okay, this is the latest generation of its top-end luxury SUV. It has two plug-in hybrid versions, and on this new platform, it's being built on the MLA Flex body platform, which is designed for internal combustion plug-in hybrids or all-electric powertrains. But the new FEV plug-in hybrids get a larger battery and more electric range. Only one, the P440e, will be available in the U.S. That's the less powerful one. For some reason, that doesn't even make sense. Why don't we get the plug-in hybrids? We'll have a 3-liter straight six gasoline engine with a 105 kilowatt or 141 horsepower electric motor integrated in the transmission. And then it gets a 38.2 kilowatt hour battery, 31.8 usable, which is, that's pretty big. In all electric mode, the battery provides enough juice for a driving range of about 62 miles and at WLTP, top speed of 87 miles and all electric only, 87 miles an hour. And real world range, they say, is estimated to be about 50 miles. So that's a solid 50 mile plug-in hybrid, which is pretty damn good, I think. I don't know. It can be DC fast charged up to 50 kilowatts, and it has a 7.2 kilowatt AC onboard charger, which would take about 5 hours to charge from full to empty. Empty to full? Right. The P440e is expected to debut in late 2022 for the 2023 model, so like a year or so from now. A pure electric version, though, which we have no real details on yet, is coming in 2024. So, Kyle, you're a Range Rover fan, I believe. Do you think owners will opt for a plug-in version of this?
Well, look, if it gives them HOV access, they will. That's the only reason they're going to do it in California, I think. With this new modern, you know, conscious level of sort of image conscious people wanting to have some sort of electrified driving, yeah, sure, I think it'll do well. I hope it's priced accordingly. And the thing about a Range Rover is, look, I've been lucky to own these things. I'm a Range Rover enthusiast, not from the image standpoint, but from their capabilities. You know, it's always been the, you know, the best 4x4 by far. You can pretty much go anywhere. And so, yeah, unbelievably luxurious. So it's basically get you out in the middle of nowhere with your massaging seats on, have a sip of champagne, enjoy a nice picnic, and then go back to the real world. In reality, it's, oh, I drove over a curb in the mall parking lot. Whoops. But it can do that really well. Trust me. It's great at popping curbs. And yeah, this is awesome. I think it's great. I think it'll be even better when they have their full electric. I hope they go at it seriously with good specs, unlike iPace, which launched with 100 kilowatt charging and things like this. It wasn't that impressive when it came out. It's really not impressive now. I saw an iPace the other day and was like, oh my goodness, I forgot all about the iPace.
There is one.
I'd love to have one so bad.
They're the best. And then I was like, let me look at used prices, and now they're affected by the bubble. But I wish I bought them when they were like 39 grand. Because what a car that is. And it was just a little old lady driving her iPace. I'm like, that's so cool. So I hope this has, you know, real serious stuff. Land Rover, you cannot mess around with the Range Rover. This is their most important model. It's their halo product. It carries so much weight in our market here in the U.S. Here in Colorado, an off-roading machine. We see a lot of them on chunky tires as like, look, I didn't buy a Jeep. I bought a Range Rover. I can go everywhere you can go, but I got, you know, champagne flutes in the back and, you know, really nice, comfortable seats and everything. And in LA, it's very much a status thing. You see them autobiography, long wheelbases on 22s. I think the plug-in is going to be really popular in both markets. I hope they bring enough here and it's not a RAV4 Prime situation. I also hope that they have the battery electric version as soon as possible. A plug-in Range Rover would work really well for us. It's going to be a very expensive car, and I imagine I would personally probably buy a Rivian over the Range Rover, and I don't think we need two SUVs. But I think for my driving, and the more I think about it, I really am trying – my audience totally disagrees with me, but I really want to run a PHEV for 6 months or a year and see actually how much electric driving I do versus combustion for me, because I spend most of my time in the city going from the office, going to Starbucks, going to see colleagues. And then occasionally when I go on a trip, I really go on a trip. So it'd be interesting to see what my percentage of usage is. Harry's Garage does good stuff in the UK, you know, tracking his PHEV mileage and things. I watch his channel. I think it's great. So new Range Rover, by the way, the entire redesign's amazing. I think they just evolutionized the car wonderfully. I'm not sold on the back end design, but everything else is great. I think it's so good.
Nice slim taillights.
Yeah. Rear steering in a Range Rover now, which is a big deal. And I'm trying to think, just, you know, optional terrain response too, with the locking diff, with everything you could want. It's nice. It's really nice. And the thing for me is I've always had the supercharged ones, the crazy ones. So I had the 5-liter V8 supercharged. You know, it's the reason it's warmer outside, I'm sure. And so this thing is finally now getting much more efficient engines. It's using the BMW twin turbo V8, which is very good. It's using the inline six, the Ingenium motor that we've tested in the Defender, paired with this plug-in system, which is better than last year, which used this really not very refined four-cylinder engine with like a pretty tame plug-in system. We've reviewed that car actually on this channel on Inside EVs back in the day. Right. And I would never get the plug-in version of the current generation Range Rover because that four-cylinder was terrible when it turned on. And it was not fast and it wasn't premium. Now you get the good engine with the good plug-in system. What's not to love?
Right.
And it goes a long way. You know, it goes a long way. It's 62 or 65 miles WLTP, but they did us all a favor and said, but hey, look, we think the real world range is 50. So that's a nice thing to do rather than just give the bigger number.
I've never seen that from an automaker before.
Yeah, right. They said, here's the WLTP number, but don't believe it. We think it'll do 50. And which is nice. But look, I mean, a 38 kilowatt hour battery pack, that's like a Hyundai Ioniq original spec inside a Range Rover somewhere. That's half an Ioniq 5. So
it's like 160 mile hatchback.
Right. They're going to need some batteries for this. And so 2024 is the full electric version, they say. Maybe that'll be the end of 2024. But I don't know. They still seem torn at that company. They couldn't resist saying, oh, and the platform will work with hydrogen, so there's going to be a hydrogen version, possibly. We don't know, but the platform would take it. Whereas some, you know, like the Japanese automakers are just going all for it. And they're like, right, future's hydrogen. VW has gone like, it's ridiculous. Don't think about hydrogen for personal mobility. So people have kind of drawn their lines in the sand. And then JLR seems a bit like, we're not so sure, but the platform can take it and maybe there'll be one. They're in a really tough spot in terms of the kind of cars they sell. Now, they are classed as a niche automaker over here, by the way. Yeah. So they do get, what's that phrase? Derogation. They get some leeway with the CO2 fines because they don't sell enough. So, but the cars they sell are the ones that are the penalized that the most under our CO2 rules. And so they want to sell an expensive Range Rover that makes them lots of money, but it's also emits the most diesel. Look, they paid $35 million in fines last year for exceeding their CO2. That's why they've pooled with Tesla this year, because it's cheaper to pay Tesla and join their pool. It's like a bit like the ZEV credits, similar but not the same. So they're in a really tough spot. I just want them to do well. I spoke this week with one of the JLR team. I can't say who they are, obviously, but they work on new product development. And I said, so 2024, like battery electric car, what do you think? And she smiled and was like, yeah, but I can't say anything. But you know when someone kind of looks confident? So I don't know, maybe I was reading too much into it. I'm like, what can you tell me? She's like, I can't tell you a lot, but like it wasn't a kind of case of, oh, we don't know. Didn't look beaten down by the topic. She would look pretty happy when I was talking about electric. So I just want them. I want them to do well, as you know, obviously a big heritage name here as well for here in the UK. But they're in a tough, tough spot. They've got to carry on selling big, heavy diesels to make money. But I don't know. Do people want them? Somebody wants one, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, here in the US, everyone just, you know, people will walk into the dealer and say, I just want the best one. So if they present the plug-in hybrid as the best one, which I think has the most torque and should lead to the best driving experience, then that's going to be the one for them. I just want this drivetrain in the new Defender. That's like my ultimate car.
But look, it tops out at 180 grand, and that's what always makes me laugh.
That's not so bad, considering that's like the Porsche Taycan Turbo S, right?
So we talk about
EVs, but you're not going to spec an autobiography. I played around on the configurator. So my dream spec, if I was to do it with the V8 here, because we can't get the plug-in hybrid, so I'd get the twin turbo V8. It was like 132, which is the same price as a nicely spec'd base Taycan Cross Turismo. Or a 4S if you want to, you know, go a little less on the options.
Such a lot of money. My goodness.
It's a lot of money, but it's not actually that much money in the dream. But, you know, look, I'm driving the new S-Class this week. I think it's a value at 140.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's the new, and what's Hummer, a first edition coming on liner? And everyone just
90, right?
Like first edition is like 116 or something like that.
Yeah.
Everyone lost their mind.
Edition. Yeah.
Like when that price was announced, everyone lost their mind. Like no one's going to pay that. And you guys, to me at the time, said, In the grand scheme of the market, like, people pay that. So
yeah, it's not that
bad. I don't know how people get that much money, but man, there's a lot of podcasts,
Dominic. It's we need to start doing two a week.
Yeah, two podcasts a week.
Bring on more sponsors.
All right.
Let me just chime in on this. I haven't really talked about it yet. So I overall love it. Love the way it looks. I like the fact that it has the range it has. I like the fact that they packaged the battery so it doesn't intrude on any storage. And also the vehicle is as capable as any Range Rover off-roading, because you know that's always a concern that they have to decontent it and say, well, this is the EV, so it can't tow this much. It can't, forge this much water.
Land Rover would never do that.
Yeah, right. So they and they didn't do that. So that's what I like about it. What I don't like about it is when it's coming out. You know, it's not coming out for another year. And then they're going to have the full electric version a year later. And then it's just kind of going to kind of be like, OK, where did this thing fit in? You know, if this was available 3 years before they rolled out the full electric vehicle, because I'm going to, go out on a limb here and say the full electric vehicle is going to be better than this in almost every regard, performance wise and so forth and so on.
It better be.
So, yeah. So, it's kind of like, OK, really, you're doing this so that, it'll be the best one for 11 or 12 months, and then you're going to come out with this full electric version. I don't know. I wish this, if this had come out last year, it'd be perfect. And had a 3 year run before they said, okay, now, you've done our plug-in hybrids. Now take a look at our full electric. So that's my point. I think it's a great vehicle. I just think it came out a little bit too late. I wish that this was available for a year or so already.
Oh my! Hey, our time is going real quick. So I need to jump to the next story real quick, just so we get it in, because it's like our title story. all right. So if you ever wanted to know what an electric pickup truck designed for the U.S. market by a Chinese company would look like, we have an answer for you. It would look like the Edison Future EF1-T. And yes, Edison Future is an interesting choice of brand name to go with. It's obviously very much in the vein of Faraday Future, but it lacks the alliteration that kind of helps make that work. But in any case, so right now we only have renders of the design, or I should say designs, because there's also, as you can see, if you're watching this on YouTube right now, there is a van version as well. But an actual physical truck will be revealed at the LA Auto Show in just a few weeks from now, a couple weeks. So like other electric pickup trucks we've seen, this one will supposedly have lots of power, super trim. It's a dual or possibly tri-motor. It's kind of fuzzy under specs still. Will supposedly do 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds. They get some volume. Towing capacity is a little lower than we've seen on other trucks, between 7,500 and 8,500 pounds, depending on the trim. The bed is a standard 6.5 feet with an option for an 8 feet. So looking at it, it kind of really puts you in mind of a more traditionally shaped Tesla Cybertruck. So like Cybertruck, it's got a solar panel, a bed cover on the EF1-T. It's optional and not really as elegant a solution as the Cybertruck. That one just kind of rolls up out of sight, but this one does some kind of clunky retraction thing. I don't know. But it also has a solar roof. The interior is kind of spare, seating for six. And it has a 17.5-inch screen. That's half an inch larger than what's in the new Tesla Model S. So Edison Future is owned by SLI Energy, which owns a bunch of different solar businesses, companies. Interestingly, it also now owns Phoenix Motor Cars Leasing, LLC, which has been around forever and now does electric conversions of new commercial vehicles. I mean, Tom probably remembers Phoenix Motor Car Company. They were going to make electric pickup trucks. The was that SsangYong, a Korean pickup truck. They were going
to the SUT.
Yeah, way back in the day.
I tried to reserve one.
Saw one the other day in Michigan.
And it's a SsangYong.
They had to put their own drivetrain in it. I don't know what was powering it, but they saw one.
An electric one.
No, I don't know if it was electric where they put a combustion drivetrain, but there was just a SsangYong pickup truck in.
Right. Yeah. You don't really see those in America. But anyway, now they're making like commercial conversions of, Ford F-350 things or whatever, but anyway, so SLI owns that company and they've got this Edison Future coming. So this company started about a year after XPeng 2016. And if they actually do manage to begin making electric pickup trucks, Tom, will Americans buy them?
Listen, yeah, we'll buy pickup trucks from any manufacturer, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. So this is all CGI. Right. There's nothing real here.
Right.
You know, they say, I think they're going to show it off at the LA Auto Show coming up, right, Tom? Pretty sure that was the case. So, okay, we'll get to see it. Who knows what form it'll be in.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it kind of looks cool. What's the price point? What utility can it perform? But, you know, we've said this a million times. We buy pickup trucks here in the U.S. If they were to bring it at the right price point and it offered utility, sure, it would sell.
I don't know if a Chinese pickup truck would sell here, though. The people buying pickup trucks, we want F-150s. We want
People said that about Japanese trucks when Toyota and Nissan started bringing them over here. Oh, who's going to buy those things? Now look at them. So, you know.
Yeah, look, I know Tacomas are very popular, but among the working people, it's still it's not an American truck. Thankfully, they're built here, though, like Tundras and everything like that.
Right. So, I mean, this could be built. We don't even know because it's, I mean, it's
I don't
a new
think
company.
It could be built. I'm just going to, I mean, it's just, we don't know. Have they passed crash testing? Are they ready to start production?
None of that stuff. No, we're in the render phase.
They can't even render it driving, by the way.
There is just a shot of the road, just a shot of an empty highway. And then imagine the car.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we forgot to put the car there. It was supposed to be driving.
It can drive on a road like this Sunday.
Look, this is the kind of road you could drive down.
Thank you. Never seen a road before.
Anyway, I thought it was interesting.
No,
it just came out the other day. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, the Chinese companies are doing like some crazy things, you know, with XPeng and Neo.
Why not? Make it. Like we always say, make it. Just make it.
Right.
Just build the first 100 of them and then put them out there.
The world. Have no basis of Chinese cars in the U.S. right now. There's none for sale. I mean, the Polestar 1's about as close as it gets. And
you haven't got the iX3. What else is there? Polestar. Polestar's about it.
We're not going to get very many of them if the tariffs continue. I'm not saying we should drop the tariffs. I'm just saying it's so onerous. It adds, 25% onto the price. They're just not competitive. And, that's not for us to really debate here whether or not we should continue having that or not. But that's going to be a huge restriction. We're not going to see cars like from NIO or XPeng, for instance, unless something happens with that, because it'll make the cars, uncompetitive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But we got to watch out for these Chinese
Polestar, I think, right now, as it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. We got to watch out for these Chinese companies. They are coming in hot and they are not to be underestimated. Yep. And
We need to compete. You can't compete if you don't, we can't. I'm not a big fan of tariffs and whatever. I like getting their companies.
Tom's a global economy kind of guy.
I am.
So, I think basically these Chinese cars are going to be amazing. I can't wait to drive some of them. We were supposed to on our recent European trip. We'll delay that until another maybe couple months. I'll go back over and set some more up. We just kind of ran out of time, had to come back. So, these cars are getting really good. And by the way, NIO, really good. I've heard some amazing things out of the new test drives from Norwegian reviewers. These things are sounding amazing.
I've driven NIOs. I've driven XPeng cars. I've been saying this, guys, that the Chinese vehicles now are world class vehicles. They're not inferior. And what's scary is how quickly they've done this. They've leapfrogged internal combustion. They're basically have said we're just going right to electric vehicles. Yeah, they've been making internal combustion cars for a while, but within China. But now they said, okay, to be global, we're going to just push that whole technology to the side, and we're going to be world leaders in electrification. And they're going to be by this 10 years from now. Fast forward 2031, 2032, Chinese vehicles are going to be as prevalent as you see Japanese vehicles, as you see European and North American vehicles worldwide. There's going to be as many of them on the road. It's going to cascade across the industry. And we need to be ready for that, because it's going to happen. Look at the technology that they've been putting forward, even with regards to charging. All these latest, really super ultra high speed, fast charging technology that we've been seeing on display, some of the best is coming out of China right now, and they're putting all their effort into that. So, we can't stick our head in the sands. This is coming and we need to be ready for it. And the European and North American manufacturers need to know this is coming. Sandy Monroe's been saying it. He's been screaming it from the top of a mountain. You know, they're coming, they're coming. We have to be ready for this and we have to compete. And I don't know if we're going to.
They are the only ones making lithium iron phosphate cells in any numbers as well. With the NFP cells that have just gone into all the standard range Teslas, they've been making CATL. I've been making them for a long time. BYD's blade battery is really good. And they've caught the world, you know, with their pants down.
So on just on the subject real quick, we're out of time, but I just want to mention that XPeng actually showed off a new 800 volt high voltage
480 watt, was it, or kilowatt?
So that's a different part of the situation. So the platform is an 800 volt silicon carbide platform, so it's high efficient.
The car. Right,
it's a lot more efficient than using traditional silicone in your semiconductors. So it also will charge super fast, 124 miles at it in 5 minutes, or 10 to 80% in 12 minutes, which is kind
of... That's it. Game over, 12 minutes. GAC showed off theirs a couple of months ago, and now XPeng showed off theirs. It's like, you know, 450, like 500 kilowatt charging is crazy.
To get this, they're going to launch new chargers, 480 volt chargers. And they're going to have them all over, at least China, at least, and wherever.
Wait, did you say 480 volt chargers?
No, kilowatt.
480 kilowatt. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's a lot of amps you're going to need there.
It's 600 and some amps it puts out.
It's,
for some reason.
Yeah, but at 800 volts.
Yeah.
Right. The car is 800 volts.
Classic. So XPeng have their own charging network already. It's not huge, but they're going to build on that.
Cool. 600.
Really impressive.
Locations, I think. It was quite late at night when I was looking at this story.
There's a lot going on with China.
Yeah. Oh, I also wanted to show you. I showed, if you're watching this on YouTube, I put a little teaser image of the electric GMC Sierra pick, possibly the electric GMC Sierra pickup. Mm. GMC put this sketch out on Instagram the other day, and it doesn't have a traditional grill, so it's a good chance. It's a little preview of what their electric pickup truck will look like, and that's the one I'm kind of psyched for. I'm like, it's got to, you know, be super competitive with everybody, you know. I think it will be. Anyway, I think that's pretty much our time for the day. There's so much other stuff I wanted to get to.
We'll do our second show. We'll get round to that, I promise.
Yeah, let's do one midweek next week,
and then you can can buy your Mercedes, Dom. That's fine.
Okay, let's get together on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, no promises, but we'll see how we'll try. Okay. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor, and I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Boo!
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.